Welcome to this Nestle Global Virtual Event in collaboration with Innovation Forum. We're going to be talking about Nestle's progress against its climate targets, looking at the progress made in 2023 in particular. Nestle has pledged to reduce absolute emissions by 20% by 2025 and by 50% by 2030. And this virtual event will feature updates of its progress with case studies illustrating how transformative action is taking place on the ground. We have a fabulous panel to talk about all of these different issues, including some case studies, looking at evolutions in target setting, and including Nestle's Science-Based Target Initiative approved flag objectives. Let me first call on Benjamin Weir, who's the Global Head of Climate and Sustainable Sourcing with Nestle. Nestle published its CSV and sustainability report a few weeks ago, showing the 2023 climate performance. Why don't you start by giving us a quick overview of that and some of the key highlights?
So before we start looking at this chart, I just wanted to give you a bit of granularity about this commitment. It's a commitment which is in absolute terms, and it's a commitment which is versus our 2018 baseline. It means that it's not a carbon intensity commitment, that we can't and we don't use offsets, and last, that the reported performance that you see on the screen has basically mitigated the growth from the company since 2018, meaning the additional volumes of products sold that you have seen on the shelf around the world. The chart that you see on the screen is basically displaying our greenhouse gas footprint evolution from our baseline 2018 to 2023. You have what we called peak carbon in 2020, which was the year where the greenhouse gas footprint of the company was the highest in history. Then in 2021, you have basically what we call the decoupling of our greenhouse gas footprint from the growing of our company in terms of volume and net sales. 2022, it was the first time that we were just below baseline. And finally, in 2023, you see our minus 13.58% net greenhouse gas emission reduction achieved versus 2018 baseline, meaning that we are more than halfway through our 2025 target of minus 20%. Two highlights to do on this chart. The first one is the distinction we've done between the reductions and the removals, which exemplify basically our adherence to the latest SBTi carbon accounting standards. So you see our 79.55 is our footprint only based on carbon reduction, and the 78.79 is basically the reductions and the removals together. What it means is that basically more than 90% of our climate performance is coming from change of practices, which exemplify basically our transition to a low carbon economy, which is what we have signed up for on the 1.5 degree pledge. The second highlight is basically the acceleration of our performance from 2022 to 2023, just below baseline in 2022 and double digit in 2023. It shouldn't be a surprise for you that knows that 95% of our footprint is in scope 3, meaning with farmers. And this acceleration exemplifies what we call the carbon time lag. Why? Because it takes time for nature to basically adapt to the new practices applied by the farmers. There is rotation, there is cycle, there is harvest. So in general, basically, we look at this 2 years timeline to see the exponential delivery of the carbon benefits of our change of practices. This exponential delivery is going to continue. And this is why we believe that we are on track versus our climate roadmap.
Perhaps you could give us a bit more information on how Nestle is going to ensure that this plan, delivery and reporting related to it are robust, credible and transparent.
It starts by being very transparent and granular about this performance. What you have here is one of the charts, one of the pie charts, but there are other on bar charts that give breakdowns about this performance. We've chosen basically to display here where those reductions and removals are coming from in our value chain. If you add responsible sourcing, dairy and livestock and soil and forest, that nearly 60 to 70% of our achieved reductions are coming from farms, are coming from sourcing, which is in pair with the weight of sourcing in our total footprint. There is nothing shocking here. You see the share of renewable electricity with 91.9% renewable electricity achieved at the end of 2023. You also see the removals part, as well as the carbon benefits from low carbon products through recipe reformulation. More than these charts, there are specific disclosures by footprint on our total footprint, on our net zero scope, on our scope 1, scope 2, and scope 3. I would just highlight to you that our scope 2 footprint has reduced by 84%, scope 3 by minus 12.4%. All of that is in the CSV report. But there is also a disclosure by GASES aligned with the new flag guidance from SBTi, where you have basically the footprint of methane with its reduction at minus 15.3%. You have also the footprint of nitrous oxide at minus 11.8%. And both of them have respectively a 30 to 300 times global warming potential versus carbon dioxide for the carbon freak in the coal. A lot of disclosure, a lot of transparency in regards to the breakdown of where is it coming from, in which soil, on which gases, and also on location. More importantly, there is an entire chapter related to carbon removals, so carbon sequestration happening in our value chains. We basically disclose that we've contracted 51 million trees to be planted in our sourcing location, 7 million trees being planted today by location, by countries. All of these carbon removals, they basically obey to the strictest rule of carbon accounting and monitoring. And what does it mean? It means that they are not only gold standard or VERA certified, but we basically apply what we call a permanent risk buffer of 20% to make sure that we have a buffer for potential loss event, drought, flood, fire, etc. The monitoring is basically contractually negotiated at 30 years for all of these projects. Of course, ex post accounting is done for this carbon removal, but carbon reversal will take place as well if we have basically a fall off more than 20% on this amount. And last, the monitoring is not limited to on-the-ground check, but you may have seen our partnership with Airbus Defence and Space where we do remote monitoring of these trees. I've got the question, how can you monitor a baby trees of half a meter with a satellite? Well, basically the resolution of the satellite constellation of Airbus Defence and Space is the size of an A4 page, so 30 centimeters. It goes across the canopy. So we can do that, and we've started to deploy that in Thailand. Carbon removal, even though a minor part of our climate performance, is really under hyper care. And on carbon reduction, you have the granularity, you have the exponential delivery, which again represents a bit the warm-up potential of regenerative agriculture. Last, you said, how can we make that credible? Well, it's not only through the limited assurance obtained from EY, but it's mainly through all the third-party partners that are on the ground with us on this 4,000 climate project in 86 countries of origins, and basically are behind the carbon calculation, the monitoring that these actions are real, that they are not double counted, that they are permanent, and that they are reported aligned with the latest carbon science. And that's a bit the subject of the next slide, is to exemplify some of this project through the people who do the job on the ground.
Clearly, nature-based solutions are going to be an important intervention for Nestle and others to help achieve net zero GHG emissions. So let's hear now from two of Nestle's businesses on how these solutions are being implemented and what they look like in practice. Let me introduce Florence Henry, who's Global Head of Sustainability and Nutrition at Nestle, Barbara Solero, Sustainable Agricultural Manager, Nestle Brazil. We're going to talk a little bit about dairy in particular in the context of Brazil. Barbara, let me turn to you briefly then. You are part of the Nature Poor Niño program. Tell us a little bit about that. Put a context to your program in Brazil, please.
So Niño is a well-loved brand in Brazil and plays a very strong role in the country supporting children nutrition. And it is present in one out of every three households, and it's consumed by more than 38 million consumers. Since 2006, a certification program created by Nestle Brazil for dairy farmers has been in place. And originally, the program was designed to improve milk quality and food safety, and later becoming an industry-wide standard in Brazil. And then the program has been evolving together with the farmers, with the community, year by year, improving animal welfare, water management. And in 2022, aligned with our global climate commitments, it becomes Nature Por Niño, integrating practices to help farmers transition to regenerative agriculture systems. And this build one Nestle Group wide commitment to promote these regenerative agriculture practices and recognizing the benefits of these farming management systems to help farmers become more resilient.
Can you tell us something about the results so far?
Yeah, so the main purpose of this program is to supporting rolling out regenerative agriculture at scale in Brazil. And so far, 179 farms have reached an advanced level of expertise, producing more than 70 million liters of milk per month, with more than 11,000 hectares of land in regeneration process, and a water saved of more than 75 million liters. And as Nestlé Brazil, we are helping the farmers in the program, supporting them with technical assistance. And we are helping them, these farmers in the program, to become more professional, more efficient through this regenerative agriculture practices, and such as no-tillage, cover crops, crops rotation, multi-species pastures to enhance their land resilience and productivity. And when we talk about dairy, we need to integrate livestock into the systems. This means improving animal welfare and cow's productivity, including manure as an organic fertilizer in order to reduce the chemical fertilizer inputs, and in some cases, supporting investment in biodigesters that can reduce methane emissions and produce energy to the farms, reducing the cost at the end. And through all these practices, the program achieved a significant reduction of 226,000 tons of carbon equivalent versus the 2018 baseline.
Florence, so Florence, if you could doing that.
Okay, so you've just heard from Barbara, a great example from Brazil. In the dairy and nutrition business, really, dairy is very important for us. It's a majority of the emissions at group level as well, one third to be precise. And as Benjamin was sharing earlier, 25% of all reductions achieved in 2023 were achieved through dairy and livestock. So it's clearly a mission critical for us at group level in our pathway to reach net zero. We have the likes of programs we do in Brazil. We have them all around the world, and this is why we're putting together an overarching dairy climate plan that has five pillars. They're all centered around the same principles as Barbara explained. It's all about the farmers to start with, the farmers' engagement, very important for us. If you talk to any farmer around the world, embracing change to reduce emissions is heavy work, not only in terms of cost, but also it requires a lot of efforts and risk-taking. So if we want farmers to come along with us, they need proper incentives to do so. We support them with technical knowledge, with trainings. We grow in professionalization and examples like the one that was shared, where climate can play in turn with productivity and farmers' revenue. We see more and more of these, and this is super to see. When it comes to acting at farm level, what we are also very convinced about is that we need to zero on the emissions that come from the cow. Through experience, we also realize that wherever you're in the world, we need to act on feed, because through feed production, you really can impact feed production and digestion of the cow, of the animal. You can impact up to 75% of the emissions at farm level. So we understand that what the cow eats greatly impacts methane emissions, and how this feed is also grown is important. If we train farmers on optimizing the nutrition of the cow and optimizing how the feed is grown with regenerative agriculture practices, then we can achieve further reductions and also hope to sequester carbon in the soil. The basic knowledge of good nutrition for the cow is really supporting us on the roadmap. We also deploy further technologies that are researched by our Institute of Agricultural Science, including methane inhibiting feed supplements. That comes further when applicable and where we can. That's part of the program. There's much more to this, in particular, how we act also on manure. We're supporting farmers to turn manure into a business. It's an important part of their journey as well in becoming more profitable. It can be in turning into biogas, into biofertilizers. And then the other pillars are just enablers for us. So enabling financing and enabling the digitalization of all our value chain in dairy. Just one thing that's super important to stress still, Jan, is that there's no one size fits all in this. This is a massive endeavor. Farmers in the US are not the same as farmers in Brazil, not the same as farmers in India. They face different challenges, different climate conditions. And all of this means that this task is very complex, but it takes time, but we are super committed to it. And we're confident because we see the progress and we see the value for the farmers overall. Coming from the nutrition dairy business, one thing that's very important, milk is important for Nestlé. It will remain so. It's a source of great nutrition for millions of families around the world, and it will stay so. So the future, certainly for us, it's a matter of, you know, business resilience. It's a matter of providing nutrition to millions of people. It's a matter of fulfilling also our vision and our mission as a company. The future will be with dairy, but it will be also with sustainable dairy.
Thanks for taking us through the various pillars of your strategy there. How are you going to execute on this strategy? What's the role of collaboration in delivery of the strategy?
Collaboration is at the center of the strategy. You know, we cannot do it alone. We will only be successful if we can bring farmers along with us, but also our partners. We collect milk in over 25 markets, but we also source a lot from suppliers. So we need these suppliers on board with us. Many of our suppliers are stepping up, and we're super glad that they are doing so. And really, I invite all our peers, our suppliers, our dairy industry partners to participate, to encourage, to provide solutions into this massive but very purposeful effort.
Barbara, perhaps I can come back to you. I know that you're working with partners in your program. Perhaps you can give us a few thoughts on how you find collaboration working well.
We have a key partnership here in Brazil that is Embrapa. It's a Brazilian agricultural research corporation. It's one of the large agricultural researchers in the world. And why we need to do this in partnership, because we need to integrate the science to the practices and transfer it to the field, to the farmers, training them, training our technicians, and they are helping us also to implement the best practices in order to reduce the carbon emissions, to build protocols to decarbonize different dairy production systems in different biomes, and also to tropicalize the metrics and methodologies more adapted to our tropical reality. This is a very, very strong partnership, not only for Nestlé Brazil, but for the whole country. Since this partnership is an open innovation, we will benefit all the dairy farming community and also the Brazilian dairy industry.
Do you any other comments on engaging broader stakeholders?
When we started this journey, one of the key challenges was how we will engage farmers. This subject was too new, very farmers or few farmers produce with one or two regenerative agriculture practices, a lot of resistance from them about the topic. And that is why Naturi por Ninho comprises a progressive incentive scheme based on the level of the implementation of these regenerative practices. There are three types of farm: bronze, silver, and gold. And as more advanced in this journey the farmer is, the higher is his bonus in the milk price. And we also provide technical support to the farmers in this transition with a group of agronomists and veterinarians monthly visiting the farms, giving them technical but also financial management advice. This is a key point to become a dairy farming sustainable. And through the Leiteria YouTube channel, we provide trainings to farmers and sharing the success stories with farmers' testimonials to inspire more and more farmers to embark in this journey. And after 2 years, we are so surprised by advances and very proud to see the farmers reaping benefits beyond environmental. They are bringing economic benefits. Farmers who applied RegenAg, they are producing crop with lower costs, less chemical fertilizers, since they are using manure as a business, as a natural fertilizer, and more crop productivity since they are recovering biodiversity, fertility, and quality to the soil. They are keeping the soil alive. The wonder is that we are all learning together. This is a really an amazing journey because we are together transforming agriculture to regenerate the planet.
Thank you very much indeed, Barbara and Florence. Thank you. Let's turn to our second case study. We're going to be looking at agroforestry in the coffee sector, focusing on India. And let me introduce Charlotte Poder, who's a strategy and ESG manager, Nestle Coffee Brands, and also Sukumaran Kurathara, head of agricultural services, coffee and tea at Nestle India. Welcome to you both. Charlotte, perhaps you can kick us off an overview of the work that Nestle has been undertaking on coffee to advance climate objectives.
Before answering your question, just to give you a bit of background. So Nestle leads the coffee industry and we source about 10% of the world's traded coffee. That gives us a fantastic opportunity to drive impact at scale and essentially to build resilience with farmers to secure the future of coffee and to transform the entire coffee sector. Now, coming to the environmental footprint, we know that from a cup of coffee, the green coffee, so the coffee beans and the way they're grown, has the largest impact on the greenhouse gas emissions footprint. So we can reduce that impact basically by three main interventions. The first one is addressing land use change and essentially halting deforestation. The second one would be to work with farmers on agronomical practices. And you've heard a bit about this in dairy. They're on a similar journey. And the third one is carbon removals. And for now, that is primarily planting trees in and around coffee farms. So concretely, what have we done? We are, as Nestle Coffee, on a long-term journey. We've started our efforts 20 years ago with the Nespresso AAA program for sustainable quality. So really engaging in a direct long-term relationship with farmers to deliver the highest quality coffee in a sustainable manner. We've also built a very extensive Nescafé Plan program since 14 years. And both of them together help us drive the sustainability agenda for coffee. What we've done along the years is increasing the coverage of these programs. And last year, we've reached about 93% of our volume through these two programs. Now, how does that help us lower the footprint of our green coffee? First, going back to the three pillars I was mentioning earlier. So the first one is to make sure that these supply chains are deforestation free. And we're doing that by sourcing certified coffee that helps us assess that there was no deforestation as of a specific cutoff date. We are also preparing for the next step, which is satellite monitoring and direct measurement of deforestation. Having satellite imagery will help us have a much more granular understanding of the potential deforestation risks and then build tailored action plans accordingly. On the second pillar and how green coffee is being farmed or is being grown, our approach is really focused on regenerative agriculture. And last year, we have sourced 185,000 tons of green coffee from regenerative agriculture. The link between regen ag and GHG emissions, the most obvious one, let's say, is fertilization. So how do farmers apply fertilizers? How often? In which proportion? Where do they source the fertilizer from? And so on. So there's a whole journey ongoing around that topic. But as you may know, Regen Ag is a very knowledge-intensive approach, and we are investing to share this knowledge with farmers through trainings. So to give you a sense of scale, last year with the Nescafé Plan, we delivered 145,000 trainings in 16 countries. So pretty global impact that we're having there. We can't do that alone. And so partnerships are absolutely essential and collective action across the coffee sector equally so. Last year, for example, we had the results of a very interesting and quite long-term project with USAID. So in Vietnam and Indonesia, we, with industry partners, have mapped the carbon footprint of coffee farming. And that helps us, you know, have a common understanding of our baseline and then be able to design adequate and tailored action plans to reduce that footprint. Coming to the third element, carbon removals. Here, I would really like to highlight the fantastic work done by Nestle Research, who is helping us clarify methodological requirements, support, you know, the monitoring, verification, and reporting of our projects to really substantiate the impact of our initiatives with scientific evidence. That will really help us, you know, increase, again, the impact of what we're doing and the investments we're making. These are pretty long-term projects. So meanwhile, we are very active, for example, in tree planting and in agroforestry. And agroforestry, by the way, is not interesting only from a carbon reduction point of view, but also helps the entire ecosystem around the farm. It builds resilience and it is in favor of nature overall. On that one, India is a fantastic case. So it's a pretty specific farming model, but really in harmony with nature and delivering, you know, both high regen and low carbon green coffee. So really a best in class, Ian, in that regard.
Let's go to India now. Sugarman, welcome. Perhaps you can give us some context to how Nestle is employing agroforestry in coffee farming in India.
Nescafe Plan in India, we have started in 2012, and Nescafe Plan is the way we communicate and engage with our farmers. Actually, the coffee is mostly produced in the southern part of India, where majorly it has been produced in three states, which is in Karnataka and Kerala and Tamil Nadu. And on an average, around 90% is produced from these states, and where our Nescafe plan is been there for the three states and even 250 plus villages, which we do. And the coffee what produced in India is mostly exported for other countries, and even it is domestically used. In Nescafe plan, there's more than 25,000 hectares of coffee has been certified by FoodSy, and FoodSy is a certification agency on sustainability, and even which includes around 47,000 metric ton certified sustainable green coffee is available with us now. And so this journey started for the last 12 years, and which we continues the journey in a global way, and with an objective in our mind to enhance the farmers' livelihood and connect with the communities, and also to contribute positively to the environment. So you could see a typical coffee farm here. This is the way these coffee farms look like in India, where it is a widespread agroforestry model, where the coffee cultivation is integrated with the shade trees and the intercrops as such. Where you see this is grown in the biodiversity hotspot, it is in the Western Ghats, which has been produced. And a lot, many multiple types of coffee. You can see the shade trees as well as multi-storage shade trees is seen. The whole advantage which we get because of this is to reduce the sunlight intensities and the temperature there. And even the it can also prevent the excessive evaporation of the water content in the soil so that the soil becomes enriched. And even it also acts as a windbreak, which helps for the sustainable growth of the coffee there. And once if it is a biodiversity hotspot means here is the farms exhibit high levels of species in diversity. You could also see a lot of in intercrops there with pepper, betel nuts, and oranges and jackfruits. So once these intercrops are grown, it's a very big means of revenue to the farmers, and they get a very good amount from this growing the intercrops in this area. And especially the shade trees, you could see the pepper is grown on that, and this becomes as a support tree for actually for the intercrops like pepper. Moreover that, this growing the trees in this improve the soil health, water management, and the biodiversity. On top of that, it is actually the sequestering carbon dioxide from the atmosphere.
Perhaps you could give us a bit of broader context then, how this fits in with your wider regenerative farming approach in the coffee sector in India.
The shade trees grown in coffee along with the coffee tree, which gives a lot of support for our Nescafe plan. Regenerative agriculture for coffee, which we divided this into three pillars, basically. One is for the soil health and then the water management and the biodiversity conservations. And everything is farmer-centric activities. We have our agronomist goes to the farms and give a focused training on soil health, water management, biodiversity approach. You know that soil quality is very important for the optimal growth and the yield of the coffee plants. We support farmers in conducting the regular soil analysis as if fertilizer application need to have the soil results in place, because this all depends on the fertility of the soil, and the application of the fertilizer has to happen after analyzing the soil. And we encourage the farmers and we support the farmers to go ahead with the soil testing and before they apply the fertilizer. We also give the training for the farmers to utilize the farm residues and the coffee husk to produce the compost and apply their plantation, which we conduct a lot many trainings to the farmers, even from special faculties, so that they would be able to help us and to resilience on this coffee farming with the organic matter improvement in the coffee. You see, the fallen leaves from these old shade trees in the farm will improve the soil health, and it also acts as a mulch which covers the soil so that the evaporations can be almost reduced from the farm, which helps the productivity of the farms. On coming to the this third pillar of this, which we talks about, is the biodiversity conservations, where you see the coffee farms here are rich in diverse flora and fauna. Do often train the farmers, and technical assistance is being given for beekeeping, one of the pollinators for a Robusta coffee in our areas, which helps higher productivity in the farm. Moreover, to reduce the usage of chemicals, and we do a lot of trainings and engagement with the farmers to do the integrated weed management. And this improves the intercrops, which also gives the special income for the farmers. So this also diversifies the farm. And we continuously work with the farmers by the agronomist and visits the farms and give the technical assistance to them. And we also support the farmers to being certified on their sustainable practices and through the sustainable certification through the 4Cs. And we also pay the premiums for the coffee which we sell, farmers sold to us. And these premiums are paid, which will be able to incentivize their intervention in the farms and will help the farmers in a way to get into the regenerative agriculture.
Perhaps I can invite all the other panelists to come back and we'll move into some Q&A. Our most popular question is asking about the tools that Nestle is using for data collection and CO2 calculation. Benjamin, perhaps you could give a quick outline as to what tools you're using for your data collection.
Sure. I mean, the idea is not to make, advertising of certain software and companies, but there is no secret. The main tool that we are using across our value chain is the CoolFarm tool, especially for carbon reduction. Now, in certain geographies, we are using other type of tools in France, AgriCycle and things like this. There are different software and organizations that have created this tool. We use the one which is geographically relevant to the community. What matter more is the compliance of the tool with the greenhouse gas protocol. This is basically what we verify when the carbon calculation reaches us in regards to the translation of a given set of farm practices into a carbon equivalent. So we are all rooted to the greenhouse gas protocol scope 3, and that's what we keep an eye on to secure that the reporting is accurate.
Let me move then to a question on dairy and Brazil. And it's around the need to think about feed. Florence, perhaps you could talk a little bit more about how you ensure that the impact of feed is reduced. Obviously, soy is something that we know a lot about in terms of its potential impact, and it's a challenge to ensure that those impacts are reducing. How do you go about that? And are there any particular certification schemes or guidance that you follow?
Yeah, maybe I can comment on that. I think the feed stream is a vast one for us. There's many levers that we are starting to activate. Number one is ensuring that the soy we source is deforestation free. That is work in progress. We are collaborating also at industry level in Brazil to ensure that. The second element is ensuring that the cows are fed and that the nutrition of the cow is well taken care of and optimized from a yield and a carbon point of view. So that's not only the forage that cows eat in the various countries, but also the compound feed. There are ways to optimize this feed. Ensuring that also the feed, the forage is grown regeneratively, and that also farmers over time can become self-sufficient where possible. That's also a way to ensure that carbon is reducing. So that's a whole area that has many levers. I didn't mention, of course, the new technologies that are coming. There are many commercially available new technologies or new food supplements that are available out there. We're taking a very close look at each and every one of them. Before it goes into our supply chain, it goes through a thorough, analysis on efficacy, on safety for the cow, for the animal, and for the milk itself through the Nestlé Agricultural Institute of Agricultural Science. I can tell you today, there's not many that are fully, qualified and that can really go into our supply chain. So that's also something on which we're very focused on.
Barbara, do you want to comment on that point specifically for Brazil?
For sure. When we talk about the soil, the carbon sequestration, it's a huge challenge, not only for Brazil, but for the whole country, and how we can scale up to see exactly how much carbon we are stuck in the soil. Particularly here in Brazil, we have a lot of things to do to increase productivity of the farms. We are focused on to reduce these carbon emissions or methane emissions of the farms. And for sure, we already start to apply at scale these regenerative agriculture practices, but I believe we can really collect this benefit from the next 3 or 5 years. And until then, we are trying to adapt to invest in technology to help farmers to do this transition, but to be more professional and also focusing and measuring the profitability of the farm, because as I said, this is so important in terms of sustainable. But yes, we are collecting all this data through CoolFarm 2. Year by year, we apply at the farm level. We already are doing this and been verified as a third party. And also to learn and to understand what the practices, what the impact of the practices in terms of carbon reduction. So when we talk about the amount of carbon reduction, as I mentioned in the part of the presentation, all of them are collecting by the CoolFarm tool.
Let me turn to the India team. I've got a question that, and it's not thinking about the move to regenerative agriculture that you talked about. How do you work with your suppliers to develop regenerative agriculture practices? Where do the costs lie? How is that spread across the value chain in particular? Charlotte, do you want to go first and then I'll turn to you, Sukumaran?
This is an essential collaboration that we have with suppliers. So we are really working hand in hand to build the capacity to be able to source regenerative agriculture coffee. So we are on a journey with them, both on the Nescafe and on the Nespresso side. We are equipping them also with the knowledge we've built internally. So they are really helping us on the ground. In some cases, we have our own agronomists, but in other cases, we have suppliers helping us on the ground with field experts and agronomists as well. And we are sharing with them the knowledge we have, the recommendations for agronomists to implement and to work hand in hand in farmers. It's really a relationship we need to drive together, and that we do it for regenerative agriculture, but for carbon equally. So I've seen some question also in the chat. We try to address these two elements together. So it's not one without the other. And on that one, I saw also a comment in the chat on fertilizer. To rectify fertilizer is the number one driver within farming emissions. And then rightly, there is the impact of deforestation and land use change. Within farming emissions, fertilizer is the one number one driver. But maybe Sukumaran, you have specific examples from India.
We have good collaboration with our suppliers, and we buy the coffee through those particular farmers with these suppliers. And we have do the method of train the trainer concept, where our agronomist will be training the agronomist of the suppliers. And in turn, these are the interventions which will be defined, and that will be the one which is implemented in the field. And the coffee which we buy from those farmers directly by the suppliers, direct coming to the supplier place. And our agronomist will be going behind the farmers and enrolling into these programs. And we do a lot of trainings for their regenerative agriculture as well. So we have the suppliers in place, and it is all connected with farmers to the supplier and supplier to Nestle. And Nestle will be intervene in these activities. And this helps us really do the implementation very successfully.
Benjamin, a quick question back for you. A number of questions on scope 3. Perhaps you could just give us a very high-level outline as what your Scope 3 strategy looks like and how you engage on suppliers across the business on that.
Scope 3, we need a journey for, we need a day for to discuss Scope 3. So 95% of our total footprint is basically Scope 3. There are what we call the must-win, which is anything related to dairy and livestock. There is everything related to the quick wins, which is the verification of the deforestation-free component of our commodities. And then there is the change and the assistance for the change of practices at farm level. In terms of strategy, we've clustered the ingredients by total footprint, by geographies, basically within this bucket for coffee, for cocoa, but also for palm oil, for pulp and paper. We basically list down the type of interventions we would like our suppliers and our farmers to implement. And from an operationalization standpoint, there is basically two business models. Either the farmer or the supplier is able basically to put an offer, a carbon offer on the table in saying you're buying that amount of milk, that amount of milk at this carbon footprint using this carbon calculator. This is what we call primary data. And I'm keen to basically implement, as Florence was saying, an optimized feed formula, a biogas digester, meaning that my primary emission factor will drop by 20% in the next 2 years. If the suppliers are able to do that, then it gets embedded into the negotiation. There is a carbon reward being paid. I'm saying being paid, but it can be a bigger volume, a longer contract. Most of the time, for the time being, it's an OPEX, so it's a price premium. And then we come kind of during the journey and afterwards to verify the evidence and the substantiation. That's business model number one. What the team have been detailing today is business model number two, where we basically shake hands and we do that together. We bring our third-party organization. Those are the technical assistance experts, which are present locally in the landscape, in the geographies. They will deliver training. They will basically go on the farm, harvest the practices which are being used on these farms, understand what are the boundaries, what the farmer can do and cannot do. Is it OPEX? Is it CAPEX? Is it infrastructure? Low tillage demands a different type of equipment. So all of this gets shaped in what we call a climate project. This is the 4,000 climate project I've been mentioning before. Within this climate project shaping, then we'll negotiate again with the farmer what is going to be paid, financed by Nestlé, what is going to be financed by the farmer, what is going to be picked up by the cooperative, what is being picked up by the trader or the middleman. So that's a bit the two business model of how to decarbonize Scope 3 in 2 minutes.
Well done. Thank you very much. As you say, that was almost an entire conference length amount of material summed up in 2 minutes. Thanks very much indeed for that. I'd like to bring in Alexandre Berndt from MBRAPA, who has able to join us. Thanks for joining us. I understand we had some technical challenges. Very quickly, you're working in partnership in Brazil with Nestlé. Perhaps you can just give us a little bit of context around how you've helped Nestlé Brazil's regenerative agriculture work and how important partnership is in a kind of national Brazil context. If you'd just give us a bit of flavor of that, that'd be great. Thank you.
Embrapa is one of the largest agricultural research corporation in the world, and especially when we talk about the tropical region, is maybe the largest research corporation. And it's really important to recognize this interaction between Embrapa and Nestlé as a pre-competitive action. Is a long-lasting working relationship with Nestlé. It is important that companies are able to integrate the latest science in their practices, and especially in tropical science, we have a lot of different things running together. And also it is important to collaborate when facing already visible impact of climate change. We all can see water scarcity and wildfires as issues worldwide. And also in this global context, it also requires new approaches. And we have the climate change, we have wars, we have inflation of inputs, costs, also putting farmers at risk. So it's a complex scenario, and we are pleased to join Nestlé in this regenerative journey.
We've had a few questions looking at regulation. Obviously, regulation is driving a lot of action in the agriculture space right now, particularly the EU deforestation regulation. I just wondered very briefly, thinking in terms of coffee, how are you engaging with the potential impacts of the European Union's deforestation regulation?
We are very much supportive of the objectives of the EUDR, which we think is going in the right direction. We're looking into that, you know, internally with our suppliers, with the farmers as well. We are preparing for implementation. There are still a number of things that need to be clarified and prepared to comply, but we're committed to comply, and that will be a journey. Essentially, we'll be able to build on the responsibly sourced journey that we have done since many years already, and Benjamin Weir is very well positioned to speak about that as well. So in coffee and in other commodities. So we'll continue in our journey and make sure that we comply with what the EUDR is requesting together with our partners and in support with the farmers, in particular the smallholder farmers, because this has to be something we go through together.
Well, we're seeing a lot of businesses having to deal with huge challenges around the regulation from the European Union. That's it. Thanks so much for our panelists for joining us. But for now, from Nestlé and from Innovation Forum, thank you very much indeed.